Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now, let's jump into it. This episode, we are going to provide a concise summary of the 2025 Chinese Grand Prix held at the Shanghai International Circuit. The race weekend showcased a remarkable performance with McLaren's Oscar Piastri securing his maiden Formula One pole position during Saturday's qualifying session. In the sprint race, our first of the season, we see Lewis Hamilton achieve his first victory for Ferrari, leading from start to finish. The main event turned out to be a Grand Prix of pit strategy and tires. We had three starting on the grid in hard tires, and the tire management actually ended up changing quite a few strategies throughout the race, which was probably about the most interesting thing. However, we did see Piastri convert his pole position into a commanding win, leading a McLaren 1-2 finish with teammate Lando Norris in second place. Mercedes' George Russell completed the podium in third. This race continues to highlight McLaren's resurgence and sets the stage for an exciting season ahead, seeing how McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull will battle it out along with our midfield. Ina, let's talk about who won our hearts.
I want to mention about the whole race experience. Technically, we got two for the price of one, which is the sprint and the race. And the sprint was very unexpected because not only did Lewis Hamilton win, but he also got his first sprint pole. So it was definitely a day and a half of firsts and oh, a nice shakeup because in Australia, we didn't see a good Ferrari performance. So we didn't think we should expect something different in China. And then, of course, Lewis showed that Ferrari had pace at some point, and as long as you didn't have to change tire or use strategy, you could win. So I'm gonna let you probably pick him for who won your heart, but for me, I'm kind of split between the Haas drivers of all pairings because I really like Ollie Bearman, and he really had a redemption drive. He, as we all remember, had a horrendous weekend in Australia, even before he got to the race day. And then he was last of the ones who finished. I think the biggest thing you can say about his whole weekend was that he didn't crash in the race, but he crashed pretty much everywhere else. So the fact that he kept it on the track for all the sessions and he had a really stellar drive. I did not expect it from him. I loved seeing his overtakes of Lawson. That was especially gratifying. Jack Doohan and Carlos Sainz. And I thought it was super adorable that he said ciao first to Lawson. Totally deserved. Then there was a little controversy. I think he must have said it when he passed Doohan, but they showed it when he passed Sainz. So post-race, he was very apologetic and wanted to make it clear that he meant nothing against Sainz. And I was like, no, even if you did, I didn't take it personally. And it's hilarious because there is this chatter of like, oh, is ciao the most appropriate thing to say? Or I didn't expect him to say it. I think that's great. I don't know if you remember from 2024. I don't think they will show this on Drive to Survive. But there was a moment where Pierre Gasly passed Ocon and said ciao. And there was so much in that ciao. You can imagine every expletive known to man, every, like, because those two, as we've seen, had a long history of not getting along. So I think for Ollie, this ciao was more playful because I don't think he's has beefs with anyone. Why I'm splitting this with Ocon is because he had a drive nobody expected with the disqualifications, which we will address in a few. He ended up P5, which is like insane. I think the highest Haas ever got was P4. So this is amazing, especially considering that car looked horrible during testing, during Australian Grand Prix. So this was amazing. And also, I know it's not the most important thing, but I also think it's very gratifying that his race engineer is a woman. So she is the first female engineer who got a P5. And I thought that was really, really cool. I wish we would hear more of their radios because I'm wondering what that dynamic is like.
We did have one brief radio from her in Australia.
Tell the truth, I don't remember because I must have been paying attention to something else, but
Or
I'm
you were
good.
skipping ahead like you said you weren't
I
going to do.
wasn't. Actually, I wasn't because I knew Australia in the rain, anything could happen. So I did not want to miss a lap. I also didn't skip ahead here, but I wanted to because my God, it was like some of the laps were a little excruciating. But Ocon also did a cool overtake over Kimi Antonelli on the grass. I mean, that was daring. That was a little insane, but that's Ocon. I thought that was great. The most interesting thing of the people who stole my heart is that neither got driver of the day. I still don't understand how Kimi Antonelli got it. I understand he's super young, he's very adorable, but come on. Like, what did he do that was so amazing? Yes, he started P8, he ended P8, and he was promoted because of the disqualification to P6. Yay. He is way off from his teammate, which is fine. He's a rookie. He's never raced on this course before. But I honestly cannot. And remember, he's the guy who stole my heart last race, so I would have given him driver of the day at that time. So I don't know if this is a delayed reaction or people just liking him a lot, but I don't agree with it.
I think it's to make up for last week because I even said I would have given him driver of the day, not Norris. And Norris only got 20% of the votes last week. So I think people are making up for it because Antonelli's race was way more interesting last week. You saw some overtakes. And I mean, Australia was just a mess, but I definitely do not believe he really should have had driver of the day for Shanghai. But okay, so you're splitting your who stole your hearts between Ollie and Esty Bestie. Surprisingly, you're probably not going to believe who I'm going to go with. The guy you went with last week, Lance Stroll.
I mean, that was a joke, but okay.
I'm not kidding. You don't see him. They don't show him. He's doing better than Alonso two races in, and he's actually doing decent.
Let me get this straight. Lewis Hamilton gets his first pole and first win in the sprint, and he's not the person who won your heart.
He's had my heart since 2021, so there's nothing to steal. It's already his.
Fair, but I thought that performance was extra special.
Oh, his performance was beyond impressive. I was so excited to see that he won in the Grand Prix. If we're talking about who stole my heart, I would say it is Lance, just because I'm shocked I'm saying that. But he's really performed, which it's just beyond expectation. If you're talking about lumping in the sprint and the race in general, hands down that goes to Lewis Hamilton. There's like no question. That's my guy. That's my driver. Overall, it goes to Hamilton, but that's going to be expected for me for most of the season anyway. So I'm trying to spread the love.
Let me get back to Lance. So I completely agree with you. His performance has been amazing, considering where that Aston Martin should be. The shocking performance by Alonso, although I would have to say in the race, it was definitely not his fault. And I loved Gasly's Alonso's brake is on fire. And I was like, wow, that's pretty dramatic. But so I think he's definitely stepped up leaps and bounds, but they didn't show much of him. So there was like nothing on the track that would gravitate my interest towards him.
It was really just watching the leaderboard. I'm like, how is he still doing so well? I always get nervous when pit stop strategies change mid-race. Everyone was expecting to do a two stop, and that impacts so many things on how they set up the car because we saw in 2023, Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc disqualified after post-race checks because they changed strategies in the race. And same thing happened this time.
Let's leave Ferrari for last just because there's so much to
Okay,
cover. But
fair.
they were disqualified for different things, which is another thing that I cannot get over.
So we've talked about who stole our hearts, who broke our hearts.
All right, if we have to do this, unfortunately, it's Charles Leclerc. Like, I tried to go with somebody else, but nobody from session to session kept my hopes down as much as him. So every session, there was something. So he performed really poorly in the sprint qualifying, especially considering Lewis's performance. Then I thought maybe in the sprint, something could happen, but I didn't have much hopes. But of course, he has to go and show some pace, and that he was gaining on Russell. For a moment there, I was hoping he would overtake, because remember, Russell overtook him again. But he didn't do it. Hopes dashed. Then we have qualifying. I'm thinking, okay, he could change the setup. He could get closer to Lewis. Oh, he did get closer to Lewis, just not in the right direction. But the fact that he almost went out in Q1, like, completely dashed any expectations I may have had. So I actually was pleasantly surprised. I mean, this is how my expectations come down, that in Q3, you know, he ended up sixth, and I'm like, well, could have been worse. So then he starts the race, and he does this little move off the curb to go into supposed gap. I mean, there was a gap, but he knew it was not going to stay open that long. So then he damages his wing, and I'm thinking, that's it. He's out of this race.
But that actually helped him.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he is like started flying.
I know.
And then I know this, we'll get to it later, but it was misrepresented that Lewis actually suggested to switch positions. But of course, the way that the radios played out, it seemed like the team was asking him to switch positions. And I'm like, there's no way in hell Lewis Hamilton will agree to switch positions. And then when he gave up the position, I'm like, well, he'll only keep it if he can overtake Russell. Why is it always Russell? Like, of the people they never show, it's always Russell. So there goes Leclerc, and I'm thinking, okay, he's going to take over Russell. I'm so happy Verstappen not only behind him, but behind Hamilton. But then, of course, Ferrari, as we always say, does Ferrari things, decides to go with two-stop strategy for Lewis. Finally, a split strategy, again, at the wrong moment, as always. So then I'm like, not only is Lewis giving up his position to Max, now Max is behind Leclerc. And then it became so obvious what was going to happen. Because the entire race, I'm thinking, there's no way Max is just chilling behind the Ferraris. Like, he's doing something. He's calculating. He's going to make his move. And it was a good move, I grant you. But, of course, it didn't go for the driver that I was rooting for. So, hopes dashed. And so he finishes. And I'm thinking, okay, this is as bad as it got this weekend, not the worst thing in the world. And then he gets disqualified. I mean, I'm telling you, at what point could I ever get my hopes up for like a moment to feel any kind of hope? Like, I can't believe I was so enthusiastic about the season in the beginning of the year. And like in two races, it's gone downhill like so much that I honestly, like, I'm like you, I will stick with it because I believe in him. Just don't believe in Ferrari. And they've just been proven now two races in a row to be incompetent. I don't know how else to say it.
I think they're going to figure it out.
Oh, Aaron, welcome to the Ferrari copium. Well, you have hopium. I have copium. We end up in the same place. That's for sure.
This is my second race as a Ferrari fan. I'm going to be optimistic because I did not see Hamilton winning the sprint. If we're going to talk about who broke my heart, he stole it and broke it all in one weekend.
That's what I thought you were going to go with. So you completely derailed it with Stroll, but okay.
I am trying to spread it out. And for people listening, I don't want them to think this is just a Ferrari show. But yeah, I did not see the disqualification coming at all. Yeah, that threw me for a loop.
Let's talk about disqualification. So okay. I think this was the first weekend where both cars were disqualified. Also, another fun fact, Lewis is the only driver who wins and gets disqualified in the same weekend. Yay! We want that record!
Well, if you look at all the records he holds...
Now he has that one!
I'm surprised we can still find new ones for him to hold. So,
oh yeah, I know. Sure. Don't give Ferrari any incentive to find you
some of those loopholes.
to find you more records for him to hold. I'm not even sure. Would it have been better if they were disqualified for the same thing? I guess yes, because you would know there was this one mistake that they made this weekend.
Probably.
The fact that it was two different things is just beyond ridiculous. Also, the thing that Leclerc was disqualified for, which was the car was underweight, we've seen other disqualifications for that, and every car is weighed after the race. So it would have been found out no matter what happened. But what's interesting is that Lewis's disqualification was for plank wear, and they don't check that for all cars. So he either was randomly selected, or there was a team that kind of narked on him to FIA to make sure they check his car.
But it was so minor
Doesn't
on
matter.
both of them. That's the crazy part. But for some reason, I think that it was the reverse of what they got disqualified for each of them when they were on different
2023.
teams in 2023.
To tell you the truth, I wasn't watching in 2023. And as we
Yeah.
mentioned during our review of season five of Drive to Survive, they never showed that. They don't like to show disqualifications. I mean, come
No, they
on.
don't.
So
No.
they, I don't think this will make it in, although I thought this was great. Like, I don't know if you saw that meme, but there was a meme that said, F1, stop making Drive to Survive. Writes itself.
I've been saying Netflix scripts endings in the season or race directors make that ever since Abu Dhabi 2021. I'm pretty convinced.
By the way, we should have like some kind of a challenge or a game to count how many times you bring in Abu Dhabi 2021, because I feel like at least since that episode, if not earlier, you've been bringing it up every episode.
It's still bitter.
Lewis won the sprint. Just think about that. I don't want to go into the downward spiral of Ferrari, but they better shape up for Japan. That's all I'm saying.
Let's hope so. I want to throw something out there for this race before we go into the rumor mill for leading into Japan. I did not have it anywhere on my bingo card that Alex Albon in a Williams would be leading this race ever.
Well, this is the thing. Like, yes, he was leading, and I think it was a big moment for him, and I'm happy he had it made. And I cannot tell you how I find that hilarious, how everyone wrote him off as being, oh, Carlos Sainz will destroy him. He will be found out as being not great because he had all these horrible teammates, and that's why he was looking good. Nope.
He's a
He
good
is,
driver.
he's showing he can beat Sainz, which
Yeah.
I don't think is that shocking, but for some people, it's a surprise. But in terms of him leading the Grand Prix, that's what happens when people pit and you don't. Like, it's so funny because I remember the first time I watched a race, I was so confused when like weird people ended up at the top of the grid or on the timescale, because I'm like, well, their cars suck. So how could they be that high up? And because at the time, like, I couldn't keep track of like who went to change tires, how they, what the grid position indicated. So once, I caught up with that, that's what happens. Look at your favorite Stroll. That's how he got up there. Because he started on cards and he kept on staying out for as long as possible. And as people pitted, he kept moving up and up and up and up.
When was the last time a Williams car led a race, even with pit stops?
I have no idea because remember, I started watching Drive to Survive when Williams were the worst car on the grid. So I've never seen them do anything.
I haven't
And
either. That's why it was so surprising.
yeah, no, it was great. Although I have to say, in terms of Williams, it did grate on me that Carlos Sainz, who was did not have a good weekend and I thought had a very poor race. Again, Ollie Bearman, who's never raced in this track, passed him. But because of the disqualifications, which by the way included Pierre Gasly. So I know we were really down on Ferrari, but Alpine wasn't that far behind, per usual.
What was Gasly DQ'd over?
Oh, the same thing as Leclerc. They're buddies after all. BFFs in car weight. Yeah, my only reaction to him being disqualified is like, well, at least they have something to commiserate about. Because, yeah, so because of the three people who were disqualified before him, he got into the points. And James Vowles, which I'm sure we'll talk more next episode, but he went on and on how it was so great to have both cars in the points. I'm like, yes, technically you are correct. But Lawson, who, by the way, of everyone on the grid had the worst weekend. So no matter how much I say Charles Leclerc broke my heart, just because I'm not a big fan of Lawson doesn't mean I cannot acknowledge his weekend was horrible. Right.
Lawson's weekend was awful, but somehow, thanks to the disqualifications and retirement, he did not end up in 20th for the first time and got
P12. That's
to
my
12th.
point. He ended up P12
I
after the
know.
most ridiculous performance ever. He ends up in P12.
Yeah,
That's what
that
I'm
was pretty bad.
saying. That was pretty bad. And one thing about Alpine, since we got on that point, Jack Doohan got points on his license, not for the race. He
Oops.
has 4 points on his license because he managed to get a penalty in the sprint. He managed to get a penalty in the race. I keep hoping he shows some momentum, some flashes of, okay, brilliance is a strong word, but I'm just saying flashes of something that could keep him on the grid. But it seems like he's determined to make sure he's out after five races. And the rumor is that before the European leg, he's going to be replaced.
Let's chat about rumors that we have heard that started around the Grand Prix and what has come out after it, because there have been quite a few and some of them are pretty interesting. Shall we talk about George Russell and Flavio Briatore?
Sure. I
Along
mean,
with Zak Brown. I think he's in the mix too, right?
it's kind of interesting. So I think the Zak Brown sighting was in Australia, and I remember seeing the picture, and it was, George talking to Zak and somebody else from McLaren. So at the time, people were like, well, it could have been GPDA, which is the Grand Prix Driver Association matters. But then in Shanghai, we saw him hugging Flavio Briatore. So we will get into everything about Flavio Briatore in our next episode. But for now, what's important is he's very controversial. He used to be banned. I actually always thought it was banned for life, but apparently it was banned indefinitely. And he's now back as advisor for Alpine, and he really cleaned house and rides a very tight ship. I mean, he's colorful. He's very much a villain. If you thought Red Bull was ruthless, you have not met Flavio Briatore. And by the way, cheating is not beneath him. So if I would say Ferrari having Leclerc's car underweight could be, Ferrari things with Alpine and Pierre Gasly's disqualification, who knows what he was trying to do. In any case, Flavio Briatore was seen hugging George Russell. And remember, Flavio Briatore is not a CEO, not a team principal. He's quote unquote advisor, whatever that means. I mean, I think he has a very long leash and can do whatever he wants. So it's interesting. Last episode, we talked about how it's possible if Toto really wants Max for Mercedes next year. Zak Brown officially said that Max is going to go to Mercedes next year. And then Christian Horner got really testy about it. If that actually materializes, then as we talked about, George is looking for a seat and who will take him. And George is doing the right thing. He's getting in front of the right people. I mean, obviously there's no way, I don't see McLaren having room for him. But who knows about Alpine? I mean, Flavio Briatore can be cooking something and we'll never figure out what until it happens.
No, Alpine could be it because I mean, there's been no chatter about George renegotiating his contract. It is up at the end of the year. We'll follow that one and see where that goes.
I just want to say Toto Wolff gave him 10 out of 10 for his performance in the Australian race, and he says he rarely gives 10 out of 10. And it's hilarious because, as you can imagine, the response is, well, then why don't you give him a contract if he's so great?
I think he probably thought he was trying to settle down some rumors and said he just added fuel to that fire. One more story that was out there was that Lando Norris's father was spotted in talks with a rival team boss, Fred Vasseur. However, I think it really just comes down to coffee. Apparently, McLaren does not serve decaf coffee, Ferrari does. And so Lando's dad was apparently grabbing a cup of decaf.
I think this is a ridiculous rumor because, especially after this weekend, why would Lando Norris ever think of Ferrari as an option? However, pre-season, he did make a comment that he wasn't opposed to joining a different team. And it's the team where everyone wants to go. So obviously, he's talking about Ferrari.
Which, yes, he's dropped that even in Drive to Survive. But I think we need to get into the biggest of all and see what unfolds before Japan, is Red Bull gonna swap Yuki and Liam? And what is going on there?
Well, it's Red Bull, so anything is possible. I think it's ridiculous after two races to do this, but if anyone deserves it, it's Liam Lawson, who, by the way, is hilarious because I've seen different statistics of how close he is to Mazepin's record as the worst performance in the first two races or three races. And I think Mazepin still holds the record, but they're basically at the very bottom of the barrel and nobody's even that close.
Oh, I think
So,
he's giving Mazepin a run for his money.
very true, but I think it's insane to switch him that early, especially since everyone's saying that Suzuka track in Japan is where he's had the most experience. He raced there in Super Formula, so he's very familiar. And if you're going to make that decision at the beginning of the season, why not give him one more chance to show something? On the other hand, what I think could be a good PR move is put in Yuki for Japan, for the Japanese crowd, for the Honda sponsorship, even though Honda is also cutting ties with Yuki at the end of this year, just to show some goodwill. Like, Yuki wants a Red Bull seat. Well, here you go, Yuki. Here's your Red Bull seat. Of course, it's insane to expect Yuki to be performing at any high level, even if the car was great. It's obviously not great. Max is not happy. And he's doing miracles with the car. But as we saw, especially when he was on medium tires, like, it was a disaster zone. Like, I've never seen Max lose positions that much.
Right. He went down pretty quickly. I would say I have seen where Max actually doesn't want Yuki to switch because it will hurt his career because the car is so difficult. The Racing Bulls car is much easier to drive. And Max has said Liam will be quicker in that car because it's not as difficult. Part of the challenge is Max has such strong racecraft. He almost gaslights the engineers because they don't really recognize the problems because he can still get performance as needed out of the car. Even though Perez kept saying the car is difficult, the car is difficult, Max was still performing. And I think that's just a testament to Max and his skill level.
But the thing is, like, what I was saying about in terms of if they switch him from Japan, then switch him back, then give Hodges. They're not getting any points out of that car, so they might as well just do a whole rotation or get people in. I don't know. So for one race, I could possibly see it. Although, again, it's just going to be insane. But since you love records, I think it would be great if Liam Lawson holds the record for the shortest stint in the Red Bull second car. And he's going to beat Nyck de Vries with eight. So I think, listen, Liam needs a record, and that's a great record to have.
I agree. I think that would be pretty fitting for him.
The only other rumor is that Red Bull will bring in Clip into for Racing Bulls, meaning that Lawson won't even be delegated to his sister team. He's just going to be out of F1. Sounds insane. I don't believe it, mostly because Clipinto has a 5-year contract at Alpine, and it's very obvious he's going to replace Jack Doohan. Why would Alpine let him go? But on the other hand, again, it's Red Bull. Who knows? It's funny because we haven't gotten to it in our review of season 7 of Drive to Survive, but eventually we'll get to a point where Liam Lawson will say he's not in F1 to make friends. And I think now he realizes why that's a mistake, because nobody is feeling sorry for him. He actually, I think, antagonized Yuki, who kind of kept it very professional. But when Lawson actually said, "Oh, why would he get my seat? I've beat him in other formulas," which, by the way, was not 100% accurate. But in any case, like, that's not the attitude you have when you haven't proven anything and don't really have the talent that will get you there. I think for him, the best thing he had going for him is to stay silent and be humble or show some fun personality like Daniel Ricciardo. Obviously, a very high bar. But I'm just saying, he doesn't even have the personality of Oscar Piastri.
No, his personality is not winning him friends. He's not trying to make friends. He's made it pretty clear. I mean, he flipped the bird in a race last year. That's so unprofessional.
To Perez, whose
I
seat he
know.
has did take. So I cannot tell you Like, there are all these memes of Paris enjoying this downfall. And you know what? I'm not sure Hugh does, but I can't blame him if he does.
No, I can't. And one of the reporters really got into it and pushed Christian Horner. Did you see that clip?
Yes.
I think they're going to have to answer for it. I mean, Lawson has said it's unacceptable. Yuki has said if he was given the chance to switch, he would 100% switch for Japan. He is convinced the Red Bull car is faster.
It is. I believe it.
He's been convinced the seat should have been his.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. This one is very tricky to drive, and the only person who finds the right balance is Max because of his very unique driving style. But they have to realize not every driver will have this driving style. So what's the point of keep developing the car towards Max? Obviously, he is delivering, but even he's not happy now. So that
No.
doesn't work all the time either. And I think they lost a lot when Adrian Newey left. Have you noticed that all of their problems started after Newey left? Christian Horner, at the time that Adrian Newey left, said that, he wasn't really hands-on, he wasn't a day-to-day kind of a person. And that's what I think he miscalculated. Because Newey afterwards has said that he's seen issues with the car and he tried to verbalize them and nobody wanted to hear him, which is hilarious because he designed the car. So it's interesting that I think maybe he's not like nitty-gritty details guy, but I'm sure like he can find a course correction that obviously Horner never realized was the big difference.
It is going to be interesting to see how humbled Red Bull is by the end of the season.
I cannot wait, but unfortunately, again, as long as they have Max, he will drag that thing somewhere.
Yes, he will. And speaking of humbled, we're definitely going to be humbled or totally discouraged and beat down by the end of the season, given how it started. But
Can we do our great expectation for Japan? So, Aaron, is it's not a sprint weekend. So, will McLaren win again?
yes.
Which McLaren?
I'm going to say Lando takes it back. My guess is they're going to alternate because they're going to let them fight it out. And then we'll see what happens when it starts to get really tight and what the team does. But my guess is Lando takes it back in Japan. I will say Ferrari will probably be somewhere between 5 and 8, hopefully not disqualified. Either driver. And I'm going to say Antonelli is still in the top 10.
Okay, what about your fave, Lance Stroll?
That's a strong word.
So he hasn't won your heart for the next race?
He's wooing me.
Okay, well, what does he need to do to keep wooing you?
Keep surprising me by winning points. I mean, I would never have expected him to get points the first two races of this season, and he has. So I don't know if he gets points in Japan, we'll see where this goes.
So you said Lando number one.
I
Who's
said,
your second and third? The
so
podium.
Lando number one in Japan. I'm going to say Yuki number two if he gets the Red Bull seat. If he does not get the Red Bull seat,
Hold on a second. Can we go back to Yuki? So you think if Yuki gets the Red Bull seat, not only is he second, which is not shocking, what's more shocking, he's going to beat Max?
I'm just throwing fuel on the fire and just throwing a big bomb out there and seeing what sticks. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, realistically, no, that probably will not happen. Would I love to see Yuki do that? Heck yes, I would love to see him put the nail in the coffin for Lawson because he should have had the seat to begin with. He earned the seat, in my opinion, last year. So I would love for nothing more for Yuki to get on that podium in Japan in the Red Bull seat.
All right.
That's a pretty bold
So,
prediction. But so if Yuki is not in the Red Bull seat, I would expect it to be Lando, Oscar, Max.
Okay. So basically same as your prediction
Same.
for this time. Okay.
Same. I think it's going to be McLaren 1-2. I just think both of the drivers are on fire. The car is phenomenal, and Max will just continue to do Max things and get a crappy car on the podium.
I agree with you on that. And the only wrinkle is, so one thing I know is that the Japan track It's not exactly the same as Shanghai. It's different, but it's closer to Shanghai than it is to Australia. Second thing is, it often rains in Suzuka this time of year. So if we get, I don't know what the forecast is. So this is the prediction without the forecast knowledge.
Fair.
So I'm gonna do like you. I'm gonna take one if this, take another one as that. So if it does not rain, I actually put Piastri as one. I do think Lando will be too. I just can't see McLaren's like giving up the good. And so if it's dry, Oscar Lando Russell. If it's wet, definitely Max is going to be on the podium. Don't you worry. The problem is, based on Australia, both Lando and Piastri went off. Lando got back on the track, but it could have been pretty scary. Obviously, Oscar had his little moment. So I actually think Lando first. I will
Okay.
put Max second and Oscar third.
I could see that. So the other drivers that are really good in wet conditions.
Ocon, amazing.
Amazing. Ocon is phenomenal. Kimi
Your boy
Antonelli.
Stroll, not bad.
My boy Stroll. We'll see
And
what he
my boy
does.
Kimi. So I forgot to mention my Ferrari prediction. Oh God. Okay, I'm gonna be very specific now because remember, I just wanted something better in one of the segments, and it gave, and then it took away. All right, no disqualifications. No horrible strategies that put us way back. Can we just do that? I want Charles Leclerc to have a great qualifying performance. I don't care if he's not on the first row, but can we be in the top four just for my sanity? And can we keep that place until the end of the race without losing something? You know, we're keeping it legal, keeping it on the track, not losing positions. Pretty please.
I hope Lewis finds that K1 button.
Something that makes the car go fast. It's like an overtake button.
Okay, well, I hope he finds it. I hope he uses it. I hope it's successful. And I would love to see them in the top. Like, if they could go 4-5, that'd be awesome.
Not gonna happen in the rain. Although in the rain, I have more hope for Lewis than I do for Charles. But you know, any miracles happen. And listen, Ferrari paid karma for the past couple of races. Now we need some return. I mean, granted, Lewis got a little bit in the sprint. Okay, now let Charles get something because I'm afraid he's going to be depressed. The things that were happening in the first two races reminded me of 2022 that I've only lived through Drive to Survive, but the awful calls that Ferraris kept making that completely derailed his chances to win his first championship. He's not even in the conversation right now, but at least some good wins that could come his way. That would be nice.
It would be. He has been getting a little flack for his sassy radio messages.
I love the sass. I think he's frustrated, and I think some of the messages that people think are sassy, it's just his usual, and some of the messages are sassy. Like, for instance, when his engineer was telling him over turns 8 and 9, you're going over the curb. Can you try not taking the curb? I'm like, it was a little condescending because he could have phrased it differently. But then Leclerc's, nope. Well, that was sassy. But I mean, for the most part, it was playful. I also didn't think it was bad when, you know, again, his engineer was telling him something. And he was saying, like, this is the 10th time you're telling me. But this has been like his thing for, you know, since last year. So I don't think it's anything new. And I don't necessarily think it's sassy because obviously his engineer wants him to do something or he's told, like, you have to tell him. So he does. So he's doing his job. And Leclerc's just telling him, like, right now, this is not what I need to hear. But remember, he only had this engineer since last year. So it's not like Lewis and Bono. For 12 years, they had this kumbaya, you know, they understand each other. You can, Bono knows exactly what to say to motivate him. So Brian and Charles still, you know, have growing pains. I think he's so frustrated with the team that he takes it out on the radio, but I don't think it's to the point where he's abusive.
That award goes to Max. Max
I'm
is abusive to his engineer. I feel so bad for him. I do think he is learning his engineer. He's had a year on Hamilton, and I don't think they were rude. They both got flack from Australia. You had a really stressful race. You're in the rain. That is a difficult track. I can't imagine, when you're trying to focus or if you're braking in one of those turns and you're just trying to keep the car out of the barrier. And they have to learn that. Although I think Bono said, copy that, Lewis, and then had to correct it to copy that, Kimmy.
I thought that was cute. It
It
was
was
very
cute.
cute.
It was cute.
I just think, I think in terms of Lewis, I think that's even more understandable because he's so used to a certain dynamic. So not to get that, I think for him, especially in the stressful moments, it's very jarring.
What is your favorite type of pizza, Ina?
I know where this is going. So I love grandma pizza.
Apparently, Lewis, pineapple and ham pizza has caused a national controversy in Italy.
Well, I don't know if he was trying to be cheeky or he's genuinely wanted to do something nice because Italians take their pizza very seriously. I could have told you that would not go over well in Italy. So, again, I'm thinking Louis is pretty sensitive to all of this nuance.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if this is his like playful attempt to show gratitude, but that was a little faux pas.
Oh, a little faux pas for sure for the sprint win. I thought it was very nice, the gesture to show appreciation for all the hard work and to celebrate his sprint win. I actually am going to agree with Sebastian Vettel, and he should have stuck to champagne. Actually, he should have stuck to Prosecco because champagne is made in France and Prosecco is made in Italy. So he should have stuck to something a little safer.
Vettel is extremely intelligent. He's extremely knowledgeable about a lot of things. So he would never make that faux pas.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your driver of the day. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.